Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Infinity Pods. Yes, I haven't done one in a while, due to the just life in general. But I also thought about having a break. A lot happening personally, a lot happening with work. I wanted to get all that sorted before I dive into another episode. And I'll be honest, I've been quite short of ideas, to be honest, about how I want to put certain subjects across. But there was one that came up a few weeks ago, and it was due to the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer dropping. Now, this is going to be a podcast episode all about Spider-Man. So if you don't like Spider-Man, you can kindly sod off, go listen to something else that I've done, or go do whatever the hell you want. I really don't care. You can do what you want. But if you don't like Spider-Man, which it's hard to find somebody who doesn't, hopefully you can enjoy what I've got to say about this. Now, I like the rest of the internet, I lost my mind in the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer. I don't think I've ever seen a trailer reaction quite like this in all the time I've been studying film, making film, researching film, critiquing film. I've never seen anything like it, really. They've really got everybody, they've got everyone by the balls, really. They really have. Marvel could do whatever the hell they wanted to at this point in time with that film, and I think anybody would lose their minds over it. But seeing this trailer drop, and just the fact that, I know when Endgame came around, about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, when we got the, I think the trailer dropped the year before, around Christmas time, the first trailer, the teaser trailer. Everyone was losing their minds about what the film's called and everything, so that'll give away, you know, what's going to be happening and everything. And I don't think even that lived up to this hype of it. And I think that's because rumours, still speculating here, most media outlets are still speculating, but there have been some leaked set photos of other certain Spider-Men on the set that we've all either love or hate. Depending on which side of the fence you're on, and it's got to be true. It just has to be. I mean, unless Marvel's really pulling the wool over our eyes and doctoring those photographs, I think it's going to happen. I do think the next trailer is going to be the big one. I think that the next No Way Home trailer we get will, I think it'll put our excitements just, I think they're at 99% at the moment, and they'll just knock you up just to 100% more. I know everyone's excited about it, but this really is, it's a huge event. I think this is a big event film, considering not just Spider-Man, but for the MCU. I mean, we haven't had a big MCU event since Endgame, and I know that was a huge event. You know, that was it's one of the highest grossing films of all time. So they've let the dust settle a bit, and I'm glad they've done that. And I'm glad they've waited a little bit longer to release this. I know it's due to the pandemic and everything. I can't remember if this was meant to be out a year earlier or not. I know not a lot of films have been chopped and changed, so don't take my word for it. But everyone's looking forward to this. No matter who you are, what you are, if you love film or not, everyone seems to be looking forward to this one. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is because, obviously, the rumours are that Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield are gonna be entering the picture now. Considering my parents have only just started watching the MCU about summer last year, and they watched them all in one go, they did one a week for the rest of the year, and the fact that I got to watch that end game with everybody, and my mum and dad was great, because it was just something they didn't understand, and now they understand. And now my mum's a bit pissed off because she's got to go back and watch the Spider-Man films because she's not a big superhero person. I mean, but I have said to her, you know, if you want to follow the story and everything, you are really going to have to know what these characters are and what studios have done and what the different iterations are, because it looks like what Marvel are doing are bringing everything together in the multiverse. Now, nothing's confirmed at the moment, and again, all speculations and rumours, but what I wanted to go into is how Spider-Man has, it's that one superhero, isn't it? I mean, I think he dwarfs Batman and Superman for me as the iconic superhero. And I think the reason for that is, I think we've got to go all the way back to the early 2000s. And, well, it could even start when I was born, actually, because I was born in 1992. So by the time I got to by the millennium, I was 8, 9 years old. And that's target audience, prep target audience for superheroes. You know, I'm a young kid who just loves bashing toys together, and dreams of being a superhero. That's what you do when you're 8, 9 years old. You know, you're still messing around, you're still playing, you still like playing the games. I mean, some fantastic games still out there. I mean, the Spider-Man 1 and 2 on the PlayStation 1, let you jog your memory for a little bit. They're really corny games, but I tell you what, I still love them. They've got a special place there. But finding out, they were going to do a Spider-Man film, and I remember the trailers coming out, and I was pumped. I mean, I think that was the first time, like, if I actually really think about it, other than maybe, I think it was Gladiator, which I think I watched 10 minutes of when it came out, and then, because I think my parents rented it from Blockbuster for a New Year's Eve and everyone was round. I think I watched 10 minutes of it and I was like, I'm bored. Which is ironic because it's become one of my favourite films. My top 10, basically. It's always in my top 10. I absolutely love that film. Bet you never thought I'd be talking about Gladiator and Spider-Man in the same sentence. But there you go. But no, Spider-Man. Spider-Man came out in 2002. And, I mean, the first, I will say, why can't, there's a bit of a tangle here, but why can't Marvel or anybody's doing the goddamn marketing for Spider-Man films, why can't they get the poster right? Some of the official posters for the Spider-Man films are absolutely atrocious. All right, there's some of the worst ones out there. The first one the first Spider-Man poster actually has him climbing up a building. And I just don't, I know his eyes are reflective, all right, but they are white. They're supposed to be white. I'm about to be very hypocritical, so just keep that in mind, all right? I'm going to be very hypocritical in a moment. But I don't like that they reflected the glass because it just looked like he's got brown eyes and it just doesn't look right at all. Fast forward 10 years after that when you've got Mark Webb's Amazing Spider-Man 2, which is the Andrew Garfield films. Now, I've got a very controversial opinion on these films, but we'll come to that later on. Now, that poster, to me, that's my favourite Spider-Man poster. Now, this is why I'm going to sound hypocritical now, because his eyes are reflective, but they show New York, but it's got this really cool aesthetic about the poster, this really sleek design. I just love that poster. I think it's a fantastic... I used to actually have that poster up in my bedroom when I was living up with my parents. I mean, I'd love to get it again. Like all my posters, when you're that young, you don't really know what you're doing with them or anything. But yeah, and then obviously the MCU ones. I mean, they're the worst. I mean, what was it? I think is it the Far From Home one? No, the Far From Home one was just the three. Wasn't it Spider-Man, Mysterio, and Samuel Jackson's Nick Fury on the poster? I think just them, those three guys. And then you had the atrocious Homecoming poster, which is actually the DVD cover, here in the UK, at least. That's got a really cool shot of Spider-Man, you know, on the ground, and there's the vulture behind him. That's a cool poster. Other one's diabolical. But anyway, you know, just a brief short history there of shitty Spider-Man posters. But yeah, no, Spider-Man 2002, so I'd say a prime target audience. I'm a typical 10-year-old, though. Typical 9, 10-year-old. I don't... At that age, you know, I don't care about the story. Even though I know the story, you know, Uncle Ben dies, great responsibility, yada, 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 who cares? Yeah, whatever. Show me things. Show me Spider-Man. Show me action. And that's why I didn't think, when I was little, watching the Spider-Man films, 1, 2, and 3, the Sam Raimi trilogy, for me, there was never enough action in them. And it's only since recently, actually, and by recently, I really do mean recently, I mean in, like, the past week, I've actually seen, like, there was sort of a, you could see one and two, there definitely was a follow through story. And then three just, well, we all know what three was like. Three was well, troublesome. It was bad, very bad. But you could see there was a coherent story running through all three films. And the tone was the same. I will say that, apart from a couple of hiccups in the third film, the tone did stay the same. You could tell this was a director's trilogy, and the same director's trilogy. And that's the problem I think the new Star Wars films had, not having a consistent director all the way through, because they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't have an end goal in mind. But Spider-Man seemed to have an end goal in mind, apart from a bit of the third one where there was obviously the same thing every other critic's going to say. You had too many villains, too jam-packed, and then you got Tobey Maguire doing those stupid fucking dance moves. I mean, by God, I mean, I'll say no more. There's better videos out there that rip it apart than what I'm going to... videos and podcasts that I'm going to do here that rip it apart, so you can go watch those. But... yeah, prime audience, and I loved it. I mean, I was at the time. I also watched the I think it was a Fox Kids show, but I think they had it on. I can't remember what channel, because we didn't have Sky or anything, and Freeview weren't around then. And we had I think it was on ITV. It definitely wasn't on the BBC, but I think the Spider-Man animated series, you know, the 90s animated series. I tell you what, that show would give Michael Bay a run for his money. I bet he has that locked up in his dungeon somewhere that he watches on a little screen by himself with a box of tissues. Because by God, the amount of explosions in that TV series, and it goes so quickly. It's funny, me and my brother were talking about it the other week, where just the plot runs at 90 miles per hour. Like, you could say it was an hour and a half story. Like, this one episode could be a film, but they go through it so quickly. It's hilarious, but it's so good. I think that's where my problem came from, because I grew up thinking, oh yeah, it's all this and this with Spider-Man. I ain't got the action side of it. So they're the three Spider-Man films. I said, yeah, great. You're gonna have to watch these, though. They're iconic. Obviously, I mentioned this first Spider-Man and the third one. I have to mention Spider-Man 2? I mean, it is not as good as people say. We'll tip the iceberg on that one. It's not as good as people say. For me, it's the villain. Doc Ock in that is fantastic. And to see him, you know, at the end of the No Way Home trailer, which I personally don't think he's speaking to Tom Holland at the end of that trailer, because he doesn't know that Spider-Man. He knows Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, so why would he be saying hello, Peter? You know, but who knows? Who knows what Marvel have got the sleeves of that one? So moving on from the Sam Raimi series, Sony decides, oh yeah, we want this, we want that. You know, with especially with the MCU growing at the time. So when The Amazing Spider-Man came around in 2012, The Amazing Spider-Man was going up against, you know, that same year we had The Avengers. And if you cast your mind back pre-Infinity War, all right, and well, even pre-Age of Ultron, again, underrated in my opinion. The first Avengers film was, I think it was my first event film, where it felt like when I went to the cinema for that film, it felt like I was witnessing history. And you get that with certain films. You don't get it a lot. It's few and far between, which is what makes them event films. You know, you can't have an event film every week. It just doesn't work that way. But it's the same thing with Infinity War and Endgame. You really knew you were seeing something special, and you're seeing all these stories come together. And obviously, this is what it's like today. Every studio wants its own cinematic universe and everything, some better than others. But I think we'll get into it. I think so we've got Spider-Man No Way Home. Obviously, we've got Tom Holland Spider-Man, which I personally don't like at the moment. And the reason I don't like him is because, to me, Spider-Man is on his own. It's all about how he deals with situations on his own. I just didn't like the father figure in Iron Man. I didn't like it. It wasn't Spider-Man to me. Again, that's my opinion. A lot of people will say, yeah, but it's, you know, the MCU had to do it a different way and this and that. Yeah, great. You're entitled to your own opinion. I'm entitled to mine. I didn't have, you know. But in this new one, I like that. This is going to be the first his full feature film without Tony Stark there as a mentor. Because I know he was by himself in Far From Home, but we still had the repercussions of Iron Man's death in that, and he was still living under his shadow, and it wasn't until the end of the film when he came out of that shadow. So that's why I class this one as his first proper solo one out of that shadow. Well, that's what seems like. I might see the film and there might be a literal shadow of Iron Man running around. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. But to the Mark Webb Amazing Spider-Man films. Now, Sony just thought, oh yeah, MCU are doing this. Sony, we've got Spider-Man. We want our own intellectual property and MCU universe and everything with Spider-Man. Hence why we've got Venom and Venom 2 and all that rubbish coming out. But The Amazing Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield is the best on-screen Spider-Man. There you go, I've just said it. He's the best on-screen Spider-Man for me. He encompasses everything from his nerdiness, his awkwardness, his relationship with people, and the way he holds himself. And then to mirror that, when he puts on the Spider-Man suit, when he becomes Spider-Man, he's got the arrogance and the cockiness down to a T, you know, and he's got all those quippy one-liner jokes, you know. And like, in this day and age, you think, oh yeah, my main criticism with the MCU, everyone's just such, they've got a very cookie-cutter personality, from my opinion. Everyone's cracking jokes, and you don't know, you know, if Iron Man's cracking quips, and Thor's cracking quips, and Loki's cracking quips, and then all of a sudden Captain Marvel's doing it, and Ant-Man's doing it, and you're like, well, where's the... I can't see no differentiation between each one. But Spider-Man, for me, is the first one that... He's supposed to be like that. You know, he is a little bit arrogant, but just the way they portrayed that on screen, I thought was fantastic with Andrew. And I hope he's back in No Way Home. I really do. I think Tobey Maguire is definitely 100% there. And I know that we've all seen the photos of the pair of them on set, but Andrew Garfield is still stating he's not in it. But he's got to be. He's just got to be in it. And then moving on from The Amazing Spider-Man, it did all right. You know, it did predominantly well at the box office. And we're just getting to 2012. We're just getting, you know, getting into the MCU years now. Like, Avengers has happened. Let's keep rolling on. Let's start churning them out. 2 years later, are you ready for this? 2 years later, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 came out, which to date is the best Spider-Man film, live-action Spider-Man film, put to film. In my opinion, God forbid I've got to say that, because I'm going to fight its corner. I will always fight its corner. And the reason I want to fight its corner is because I think the film is a perfect capture of a comic book, which is what they're supposed to be. You know, I know you're adapting comic books to film, and you know that you know the films can take their own, you know, their own directions and whatever. But when someone says to me, "Oh, it's a comic book movie," I know the MCU's changed that, and the DCU's definitely changed that, for better or for worse. The Amazing Spider-Man 2 feels like one of those old 90s cartoons have been literally copy and pasted onto live action. And that, I think that's why I like it so much. And like I mentioned earlier, I think that's why, because I grew up with the 90s and in that 90s Fox Kids show and the animated series, to me that's Spider-Man. And yeah, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, I'm a sucker for a good love story. Yes, I'm breaking down, I'm not stereotyping, because, you know, this day and age, you've put your toe in a bit of water without some precious little petals coming out the woodworks. And he gets there, he gets there, just fuck off. The Amazing Spider-Man 2 has a really good love story in it. And it's a very important love story as well. I'm not a comic book reader. But my idea of a comic book and what I've seen is that's how it translates to film. And how... I mean, you've got the death of Gwen Stacy in there, which is a huge moment in the comics. It's a massive, you know, every documentary I've watched, everything that I've seen, you know, everything, anything to, people always go back to, you know, oh yeah, it's that moment changed, you know, what Spider-Man was. It's a big part in his story, big part in his life. And I think it's done beautifully in this. I really did think it's do think it does. It like any film, any decent film. I mean, it isn't a perfect movie start to finish. I mean, if you've listened to a couple of these podcasts, I will wholeheartedly say Jaws is my favourite film of all time. I've seen it so many times, but it's not perfect. It's not a perfect film. You know, it's not. I can say it's perfect in a way that, oh yeah, it's perfect to me, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't, there are lulls in it every now and again. You know, there's a lull, you know, let's just say when he's, you know, when Cliff Brody's doing this, that and the other, or is when he's on the beach or something, there's that elements of that, like, I don't like. I mean, they might last 10 seconds, but I don't like them. You know, that's my opinion. But it's the same with The Amazing Spider-Man 2. There are lulls in it where I'm like, yeah, that I can see why people don't like that bit, but I like it because it's got this, this, and this. I think one of the big criticisms, again, this is going back to Spider-Man 3, there was too many villains in it. So you had, I think in one film, you had Gwen Stacy's death, Norman Osborn dying, Harry Osborn being the Green Goblin, Electro, that whole battle and everything. Then you had Black Cat introduced. You had, what else? The Sinister Six at the end, building that up. And all of those things, that's five or six things I've mentioned there. And they're not small things. That's another reason why Batman v Superman didn't do so well. It didn't, apart from the ridiculous plot of, you know, oh, we hate each other, Lex Luthor's got me mum, will you help me? Yeah, sure, let's go save the world together, now we're best friends. Oh, I don't want to kill you anymore. Like, well, what? Yeah, ridiculous. But Batman v Superman also suffers from the same thing. There's too many villains, there's too many storylines. And you've got the death of Superman, you know, introducing Lex Luthor. You've got Batman v Superman, which is what the fucking film's called. You then got to set up the Justice League. Then you're introducing Wonder Woman. And you're just like, oh my God, this is like, these could be whole films in themselves rather than just, you know, all tied together. I mean, Batman v Superman is a mess. It's an absolute mess. Visually, it's amazing. You know, you see some of the visuals in that film are unbelievable. And credit to Zack Snyder, because that's the type of director he is. Which hopefully we'll get to see a continuation of that with another Justice League film, which I really hope we do see another one. But coming back to Spider-Man 2, it's also the best Spider-Man theme that I've ever heard. It's unbelievable. It really is. It's definitely one of my favourite. I mean, when Insomniac did their first Spider-Man game, I had that music, I had that soundtrack on a lot when I was swinging through the city. I know it sounds sad, but everybody's done something like that with games. Everybody has. I'm sorry. I mean, you've done it with, you know, when you're driving, when you're on in GTA, and you'll put some music on or something. It's what you do sometimes with games, but for me, that music is Spider-Man. And the action sequences are fantastic. They're visually stunning. I like the character development. Yeah, it's a bit hosh-posh here and there. There was no mention of, you know, I don't think there was any mention of Harry in the first one, and then all of a sudden the best mates and everything. Like, yeah. But I like it. It's got a good soundtrack. It's got a good score. And just the way it ties the story together. It's just its own little thing, you know, on its own, as in, you know, with the Sony universe. So I'm obviously classing the first Amazing Spider-Man film now. But I liked it. I really liked Amazing Spider-Man 2. And I know it gets trashed by so many people, you know, about what, you know, what is a good superhero film. But, you know, opinion's opinion. I liked it. I still like it. It's one of my favourite Spider-Man films. I don't think that tone's going to be brought over to No Way Home at all. I'm not expecting it. But I am expecting to see Andrew Garfield in that. I think it's the best. It's got the best swinging scenes. It's got the best Spider-Man suit in it as well. I'll also say that. It's got the big white eyes, which I did read the, I think it was it Ultimate Spider-Man or Unlimited Spider-Man? It was one of the two. I think it was the early 2000s. It started an actual comic book. And that's the type of, that was the Spider-Man I knew. And that's why I enjoy it. So that's why I like The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I did want to do a podcast on episode on this for ages, but it was definitely not going to be my first one because I thought I'd alienate too many people. I say too many people, like the five or six people that listen to this thing. But yeah, I liked it. And hopefully No Way Home, I mean, I say hopefully he's going to live up to expectations, let's be honest. Let's wait for that second trailer to drop, which I'm sure will be the next, I think they said October, did they say? I think it's read somewhere, it's mid-October. It's going to drop. It's the film's out in, is it December? It's out, I think. December, yeah, 17th of December. God, that's going to be, we've got Spider-Man and Matrix 4 in the same week-ish, in the vast amount of days. That's going to be a lot. Well, that's been my little one shot on Spider-Man, the Spider-Man films. Quick overview, I know, but it's kind of hard sometimes because I don't do these with a script. They're more of a mind dump sometimes, and sometimes it's nice to just get everything out. So if I haven't explained why I like something or why I hate something too much, or if I've been a bit hypocritical, there is a reason for that, and I don't write anything down for these. They're all what I'm thinking at the time. And I mean, yeah, I've got a list of things in my head of what I want to say, but don't expect a linear experience with these things. But no, thank you very much. I mean, I'm hopefully going to do a few more of these. Yeah, we've had a break here and there, but with the night's drawing in, and obviously we've got the big month of October coming up. October, I've got some cracking episodes for you. We're going to cover, I think we're going to cover slasher films. I think we did the horror genre, didn't we? I can't remember doing that. I don't listen to these back, because I don't know about you, I can't stand the sound of my own voice. It's ridiculous. We've got slasher ones coming up. We'll have a one shot on The Exorcist 3, because I've left little nuggets here and there. If you've been listening to these things throughout the year, I'm building up The Exorcist 3. I tell you what, that's going to be the one. That is, I might even put some extra work into that one, get some sound effects going in that one, because by God, you guys need to see it. If you haven't seen it, you're doing yourself a disservice. Funnily enough, there was someone, one of the big accounts on Twitter, I think it was. If you guys don't know, do some incredible stuff. I need to get some more of their stuff, actually. My ass full for Christmas. Anyway, but they tweeted out about The Exorcist 3 being released on this day, so 20, 30 years ago. I just tweeted like, yeah, you need to see it. And I got a nice reply from them saying, yeah, you're totally right, dude. Like, oh, it's nice that someone else knows about it. So what have anyone said to me? Oh yeah, Hostel's the best horror film. Oh yeah, it was so scary. Or scare factor in this. And like, the audience these days do not know what they are missing. I think we're too parented by companies of what we get told by companies what. If we find it scary, you find it scary. Or this is what you're scared of, so you will watch it. But no. But anyway, I don't want to talk about horror films too much in the Spider-Man thing. So, thanks very much, guys. And I'll see you next time.